And welcome back. It's a new year, a new episode of Folk Artwork and Friends. I hope the holidays have treated you well and that you got every single little thing you wanted. Hopefully rest, relaxation, and a ton of cash or some art or whatever is on your list. I am very excited about today's episode, which we'll get to in just a moment, but this is Folk Artwork and Friends, my conversations with some of my friends who I have met over the course of the past few years in the world of outsider, self-taught, folk, visionary artwork. They are artists, gallerists, museum folks, lovers of just this type of artwork, and I've met them at art fairs, museums, online, a lot of them. They say don't meet people online, but I've met almost all of these people online, a lot of them in person, but most of them online, and they've been great, fantastic people. So I'm excited to share my latest conversation here with you today. Before we get to that, it is the first Friday of the month, which means it is time for a new Folk Artwork and Friends episode. But also, if you are in the Des Moines area, every place 3.5-4 hours from here is the Des Moines area, in my opinion. Minneapolis, Omaha, Kansas City, Chicago, close. First Friday at Mainframe Studios is Friday, January 2nd. If you're listening to this today, the day it comes out, and I am again thrilled to announce that I will be joining Ashley Mary in her beautiful studio with her beautiful artwork, possibly her beautiful child, who last time took a nap on my shoulder, which was really fun because my children are almost too big to be doing that now. But I'll be there again with Ashley, showing work by Renisha McCoy, self-taught artist out of North Carolina, and Canadian folk artist Jackie Bradshaw. So come out, say hi, and stay tuned for more about potential more showings at Mainframe Studios the first Friday of every month and beyond. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by one of the most talented artists out there currently working, doing some incredibly powerful, moving, and important artwork. It is the one and only self-taught artist, Esteban Whiteside. I first got to know Esteban years ago. I was extremely impressed with his artwork. Esteban is a black artist living and working. He was out of Washington, D.C., currently now in North Carolina, back where he grew up. And he does paintings, large-scale paintings, sculptural work, wood carvings. We'll get into all of it. But I've been such a big fan of Esteban's work for a while now. Got to meet him in New York last year at the Outsider Art Fair, which I was able to show some of his work for him. And I'm just really impressed with what he does and continues to do. I think he is doing important work. And I just, again, as I will tell him probably too many times, but I just respect the hell out of his work and what he does. So I'm just thrilled to know him, to see his work in person. If you've not seen his work in person, I highly recommend it. You can follow him, though, on Instagram, Esteban Whiteside. And I hope you enjoy this conversation with him today. All right, here we go. All right, Esteban, good morning. Thank you so much for joining me. You are joining me out of Durham, North Carolina, and we'll talk more a little bit about that, but I'm excited to have you. I first want to start with a little compliment. I feel like I've told you this in the past, I hope, but I want you to know again just like how much I respect the heck out of your work, you and the work that you do, sort of your activism with your artwork, as you will, if you will, And I just, you go so hard. And I just, again, I want you to know that I just respect the hell out of that. So keep it up. I know this is weird to like at the start of the podcast, like, hey, keep it up. Great. Thanks for being here. But I just want to start with that. And
I really
I want to talk,
that.
I want to talk more about your work and get to that. But as we were kind of just discussing before we started recording here, it's embarrassing. And I feel like, we're relatively the same age. And as it seems like more and more, especially for middle-aged men, that they'd rather start a podcast to like talk to their friends than actually talk to their friends. So that's what I'm doing here. And it's embarrassing because we've known each other for a few years now, finally got a chance to meet in New York in March. But I don't know a lot about you kind of before your artwork. So the biggest question I have for you is like, when you were growing up, did you always want to be an artist, or what was art like in your life as a kid?
So I definitely always loved making art. Like I'll find like some of my old stuff. You know, I was always drawing like Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters and stuff like that. And it was, I think it was like in elementary school when they would have like these yearly contests of, you know, the best artwork for like, I think it was like three different age groups in my elementary. And it was like every time that I saw these contests, it just made me feel like art is not for you, because these people were drawing like super realistic things. And like, you know, my work is never been like hyper realistic. And that was kind of always like the standard in our town. It was just like, you know, if you can't draw something that looks exactly like the object, then, you know, maybe art is not for you. So, you know, I was like heavy into sports just year round. There was nothing to do in our town. So it was like me and my wife now, she was also, we grew up in the same town. So she, you know, we both just played sports year round. My brothers all played sports. And like, that was always like the focus, but art was something that, you know, I always loved looking at, I loved to do it, but it kind of felt like, you know, like I'm not, like art is not in the cards for me, because couldn't draw as good as a lot of other folks, you know, so.
Yeah, man, I 100% I relate to that. But then also now as a high school art teacher, I see that. I see that almost daily, where kids are like afraid to draw or afraid to push and keep going because it's not realistic. And it's not the biggest thing is always like, kids are like, well, this doesn't look like a real ear. And I'm like, I don't care. Like who cares? And maybe I'm either the best or worst teacher because I like hate hyperrealism. But yeah, no, I totally get that. So, you probably then, similar to me again, I think we're the same age. In the sixth grade, I was like, all right, I'll be in the NBA. That's what I'll do. Were you kind of like on that?
Yeah, like that's what I thought I was going to do as well. Yeah.
Hey, there's still time for us, dude. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the
best. I just stopped growing and never could really put on a lot of weight. So I was like, yeah, I don't know about this.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. So then did you go to college? Was like when you even went to college, was art even like on your radar? Was it still a thing you kind of did here and there? Or is it just like, all right, I got to figure out, you're like, I'm not going to be an artist. I'm not in the NBA. So like, what do I do from here?
So I would always like, you know, I couldn't focus for a long period of time. I would always start drawing and I would always try to draw stuff in class or in church that would make somebody laugh. So I would try to draw like people in the church, like in a funny way. And then I would just kind of show it to my brother and try to get him to bust out laughing
in the middle of church.
And I would do the same thing in class. Like I would draw something, I would just kind of like show somebody like that. But I just couldn't focus. Like I always just like was always sketching. And then when I went to college, I played basketball in college.
Okay.
So I went to a school down kind of towards Charlotte. It was like a D2 school. I hated it. So then I transferred to Montreat College right below Asheville.
Okay.
And it used to be the Black Mountain College, which is like, you know, this really cool experimental school where like Jacob Lawrence, Willem de Kooning, all these big time artists came for a couple years. And the school didn't last very long. But when I was at Montreat, I was, you know, they told me I had to take an elective, and I ended up taking like intro to art. And in that class, you know, I got to learn all about the Black Mountain College. And I was just kind of thinking like, you know, why did all these big time artists, you know, come here? So that sent me down like a rabbit hole. And that's kind of where I first discovered, you know, Jacob Lawrence's work. And and my art teacher there, like at for the end of the year, we had to do like a project. And I remember creating all of mine on like, what was it? Like it was paint on the computer. I think that's what it was called.
Oh, yeah.
So I did a whole.
It's just like MS Paint.
Yeah. I did a whole project on that. And I was awesome. Like, man, you know, that was like a lot of fun. But I still didn't really, you know, start painting until I think it was like maybe 4 or 5 years after college. I was bartending, and the bar was always like super dead during the day. So I was like, you know, I had an iPad. I was like, I'm just going to start sketching on here, and started sketching on there. And then, you know, before long, I ended up moving up to DC to be with my girlfriend at the time, my wife now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first few months there, I couldn't find a job in DC. So I just started, you know, sketching even more. And then my first job in DC was at the Phillips Collection, which is like one of my favorite museums, private collections, and just started garden artwork for 8 hours a day. And the first room they put me in was Jacob Lawrence. And I got to be in there with the Migration series. And, you know, really like made me feel like, I was like, man, you know, like this work is something that, you know, eventually I think I could do. And I at least wanted to, like the images were so powerful that I was like, even if I can't draw well enough, like I want to do something that's just like, you know, talking about the times and just something super powerful. So that kind of started. You know, started everything.
So I always kind of wonder like what people's like year zero would be, which would be like mm-hmm. sort of their, you know, that explosion, that big bang of sort of that work. But yeah. Before we kind of move forward a little bit with that. So did you say you were working as a guard, guarding the collection?
Yeah.
That is, if for anybody listening, that is one of the greatest jobs, especially I think for an artist. I worked at the Des Moines Art Center for a couple of months. It was right before COVID. And the only reason why I'm still not working there was probably because of COVID. But as a security guard for the artwork, and mm-hmm. it is the greatest job in the world because you are by all this amazing work. You rotate kind of through, at least my job, we rotate through the gallery every hour. And for the most part, there's like not a ton of people there, like during the days, you know, so you're just there mm-hmm. and you're just like able to soak in this work. And it's just, it's the absolute greatest. Yeah.
No, I loved it. It was my favorite job that I've ever had.
Yeah.
My neighbor got me the job. And then, you know, I was before the interview, I was like, you know, I can't name five artists. I was like, they're not going to give me the job. And then I was worried, like everyone that comes in is going to be asking me questions about the work. And really everybody's like, where's the bathroom? You know? So
yeah, sure.
Nobody asked like, about the work. So,
right. But then you're like kind of forced to learn about the work. Like, you know what you're saying, because like you're there for 8 hours and it's just you and the work. So just out of sheer curiosity or boredom, you're like, okay, Jacob Lawrence. Okay, migrations. And then you just learn, and then that kind of sparks that interest in you. So that's really cool. So like some of those first, I know you talked, and I think, again, you and me are fairly simpatico, and like I was drawing my favorite TV shows, Ninja Turtles, Reno 911. I have, my mom still has this like work I did in middle school of Reno 911. But then sort of these first works, maybe either while you were bartending or just starting to learn more about Jacob Lawrence, like what was sort of either maybe the subject matter that you were like sketching or drawing?
I think at the time I was like really watching a whole lot of Ancient Aliens.
Nice.
So I was like drawing, like, you know, I was like looking at hieroglyphs, trying to draw those. And one of my first pieces I remember was like, I drew like three images that I just happened to see, like three figures that were in some hieroglyphs, and I did that. And then, I didn't have any money for it. It was like around Christmas time, and I was like, I'm gonna paint my nieces and nephews just some small animal pieces. And I did that, and I was just like, man, like that really felt like therapeutic, even though it was, I just it was like a whale and a turtle or something like that. But once I came back after Christmas, I just like, I'm gonna keep doing this every day until, till I can't. And it turned into just like having a house full of pieces, after like a year. Then I decided to take that out to the street and try to sell it.
So you were like actually just going out on the street and being like, hey, posting up, selling works, or just at least getting your name out there.
So my wife, we would load up her car and she would drive me out to one of the busiest streets in DC, 14th Street. And I would just unload it all the way down a block, like on the side. It was like maybe 30, 40 pieces. And I would just sit there on a little stool. And I just loved watching people interact with the work. I was like, whether they liked it or not, like just anybody that like stopped by, like I loved talking about it. And before, like I never loved talking to strangers. Like I would like get like sweats if I had to talk to somebody that I didn't know. So I was just like, man, like this feels completely different. Like it feels like something that I'm supposed to be doing right now. So I used to do that like every weekend, just take my work out there, and I would sell a couple, and I would just be like, man, like this is, I'm gonna do it the next weekend, and just turned into me meeting a collector up there who bought like six pieces. And then I was like, man, like I think I could really, really do this for a living. And yeah, many years later, I was able to paint full time. But at the time, that was like the spark that made me feel like, if this many people are interested in the work, maybe I could do this.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, we've talked, and I guess I've heard you in other places kind of talk, and I don't know if this would be your year zero, and I don't know why I'm like doing this for anybody watching. I don't, this is maybe I'm coming together for that zero, but so would this have been kind of before, during, after maybe? I've heard you say that sort of really what has sparked your work and really sort of I feel like maybe you've took off running was the unfortunate killing of Michael Brown in 2014. Like, what was it about that specific event? Where were you? Like, what emotions came over you that really, I think, as you have said, and you can kind of see in your work, that really kind of took it to that next level where you're just again, like, not holding back, and really changing almost from that artist to activist, with the messages in your work.
So yeah, like before that, I was just doing like stuff that I thought looked cool, and I was trying to think like what would look good in somebody's house, like doing patterns and stuff like that, and doing, abstract work. And I feel like when I saw the images of Michael Brown like laying in the street and how like his family was like so upset, and they just wanted him, they wanted him moved out of the street because it was like pavement was over like 100 degrees. And I just remember seeing that, and I was like, if I'm gonna do art, like I want it to be about something. And I feel like at that moment, like I pulled my head up out of the sand and like really started looking around. Before that, it was like ignorance is bliss, like I was buried into sports and all these things that kept me out of really paying attention of like what was going on with people like me. And it was like at that moment I was just kind of like if I'm gonna make artwork, I want it to be about something, not just something that looks good. I want it to be powerful, and I felt hopeless, and I felt like there was helpless, not hopeless, felt like there was like nothing that I could really do in that moment but be angry. And yeah, I felt like art was like the one thing that I could do. I didn't have a lot of money, but I was like, I can make art talking about these issues, because all the galleries that we went to, I never saw anybody talking about any of the stuff. Like I never even though police brutality was all in the news and it was happening all the time, like I never saw any work about it. So I was like, I think, you know, this will be a lane for me, because it's evoking so much emotion, and you know, I feel like I need to do something, but I don't know what to do. So, you know, art kind of became it.
Yeah, you know, you say like you kind of switched from making work maybe that was beautiful or that people would want to hang in their homes to more of that, those messages. I personally believe that your work is one and the same. It is beautiful and it has a message. But I think there are probably some people that might think like, oh, this is too much for me. Mm-hmm. In my home, right? I think, you know, looking back at the Outsider Art Fair we did this year, you were named in Art News's one of the 11 most knockout artworks at the entire Outsider Art Fair. That was your piece about sort of the Wheel of Misfortune with Louis Mangione. And I think even I was just reading back yesterday, the other day, the guy who wrote the piece was saying, like, I don't go to the fair looking for rip from the headlines type pieces, but I think he said he was very humbled and surprised and loved to see that. I think what I'm getting at is a little bit of, that's almost 10 years later now, you've been doing this. So what are some of the pros, some of the cons of what you've noticed in sort of the art world here of your work being so overtly, whether political or just that message that might make people uncomfortable? Like, what are some of the things that you've noticed that have been really great with that, and maybe some things that have not been so great?
Yeah, I mean, I think like some of the things that have been great about it is like, you know, some of the people that I look up to, like Nicole Hannah-Jones and like Kyrie Irving, you know, they ended up buying pieces from me. And, you know, when something like that happens, it just like totally validates, you know, like what I'm doing. And I don't think I sell as much work because the work is, you know, in your face like that. But I feel like once, you know, when the right people find it, you know, it just feels like it's meant to be. And, you know, I might have to search a little harder to find the right audience for my work as opposed to it just being, you know, broadly accepted. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like the right people who I look up to, you know, are also, you know, into the work. So, mm-hmm. you know, that means a lot to me. And, you know, some of the negatives is just, yeah, like it's not for everybody. And there's a lot of galleries and a lot of opportunities that I miss because, you know, people aren't willing to show that type of work. But, you know, the people that I do meet, like you and, you know, like Mokata up in Brooklyn, you know, like whenever I find a place that is willing to show the work, it just means a lot more because, you know, I know that they're like, you know, they're willing to support what I'm doing, and they're willing to talk about like the serious issues, you know. So like I might not be, you know, shown in as many places, but the places that I am shown, I feel like it's like it's the right fit, as opposed to just being able to show it everywhere, you know.
No, I mean, you basically just said this. I just pulled this quote, I think from either your website somewhere, but you were quoted as saying, I want the right people to love it. And if you feel guilty, that's probably how you're supposed to feel about it. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I think like that's spot on. I think at the Outsider Art Fair this year, I would say almost everybody that walked into the booth was immediately attracted to your work and let out some four-letter word of either this is amazing or, oh, this doesn't make me feel good. Mm-hmm. But like, that's what it's all about. And I love that so much. And again, that's why I just respect the hell out of you for going as hard as you do. It's really great. I wanted to, touch base and talk a little bit about your work and specifically some of the artists that have kind of inspired you. You mentioned Jacob Lawrence. I think I've heard you talk about Romare Bearden, Of course, like Basquiat could be someone that is your work is of reference to, but I think two artists specifically that you and me share a strong bond about, and maybe for this audience, would be Steve Ashby and Elijah Pierce. Like two of, I think you and me would consider just the absolute goats of like, especially of wood carving, which I've got one of your pieces right back here, one of your original wood carvings. So can you tell me a little bit about like maybe when you first discovered their work or a piece that of theirs that has always stayed with you and what it is about their work that has really inspired you?
I think like the first time I saw Elijah Pierce's work, it was I think at the High Museum.
Yeah.
And that was, just all the work that was there, it was like it was I got to see Ronald Lockett for the first time. What's the good Howard
Oh,
Finster,
Finster,
all these people. That was like my introduction to them. And I just always felt like, like folk artwork is like that's my lane,
sure.
So I don't know, like seeing those sculptures with the bases like that, it was like I immediately when I saw it, I just wanted to create something like that. And I've done a couple pieces that were based on Steve Ashby's pieces. There's like the one where it's like the hunter standing over the person
Yeah.
and the person laying
Yep.
flat, and I've kind of reimagined that piece before. And yeah, I don't know. Like those are, as far as sculpture artists go, like those are two of my favorites for sure.
Yeah, and then you were fortunate. I was fortunate enough, and I appreciate it again. You including some work in a show we did this summer in Austin. And I don't know if I might have sorry for anybody that's like expecting new paintings from you, but I might have inadvertently like put you on this carving spree, right? Of like
Definitely
new
did.
carvings. So I don't know if you've seen any of Esteban's pieces. We'll include some here in the works or in the video feed. But they're just so incredible. And so again, moving the messages are absolutely brilliant. You do have three young children at home. We don't need to talk too much about your kids, but how has it been having kids, maybe either with your work, how's it either influenced your work or like how has it been for you as a father to like share that work with them? I know I've seen you even like putting on art shows with your kids' work. Like how has that been? How do they enjoy having a dad as an artist?
Well, I mean, I love it. Like, I get a lot of inspiration from my daughter, like seeing her work, like the way she is just so free about it. And then it kind of makes me sometimes want to not make all my work political. It makes me just
Sure.
want to like do some fun stuff like she's doing. But she kind of bounces around. She does like polymer clay sculptures. I mean, she was working on some before I came up here. So like a lot of times I'll see her doing something and then it'll make me want to, switch up how I'm doing it. Or, I'll ask my daughter especially, like, what color do you think I should use right here? And she'll tell me something. So like I think that is, a lot of my pieces from far away, they might look like they're really fun and, and colorful. And I think a lot of that has to do with my kids, but then the message is still the same. So I don't really
Sure.
get into all that with them about what the pieces are about necessarily.
Sure.
I tell them like, later on I'll explain this to you. But, in the moment, I think it just keeps me like from not trying to overthink the pieces too much. And, when I'm creating with her, and my two sons, they like for me to draw like the outline and then they just come in and like go crazy on a piece.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just helps me to like not be so serious and to like sometimes, just go in and create the first thing that comes to my mind and not sit there and think about it for too long and just have fun creating, because, they do all the time. So
Yeah, for sure. I know one of the greatest pieces of art I've done was I was really going to try to be a super serious artist and make a self-portrait. And I was really into it. And then I think he was 5 at the time, came up with a marker and drew eyes and face when I wasn't looking. And I'm like, that's way better than I could ever do. So I'll take it. Yeah, and again, too, I think like your kids are probably, they've got to hopefully be inspired to see what you do. But I've actually shown my son your work because, again, back to our original or that beginning of our conversation with that hyper-realism, I've told my son, even at 6 years old, he's like, I want this to be perfect. I'm like, dude, like, look at Esteban's work. Like, this is not, you don't have to do this. And I've shown my high school kids your work just to show them, like, hey, I think personally the message, the meaning is way more important than, again, I could care less about hyper-realism. That's one thing that's been great about your work and getting to know you more. Do you have any 2026? This is officially coming out in 2026. Do you have any projects, any shows, anything upcoming that you'd love to talk about?
Well, I have one show that's coming up in DC, I think probably in either September or October. It's going to be at Art Enables.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And that was like a gallery that was super close to my house when I lived up there. And I just loved what they do, and I loved a lot of the artist work that was, that's part of that collective. So it's going to be like a two-person show, with another artist up there. We're still trying to like exactly figure out who I'm going to pair up with, but that'll be in the fall. And then I think maybe like in March or April, I'm trying to find a place in North Carolina to do a show, because like the last time my family has really seen my work was like, 2015, when I was like just getting started. So
Sure.
I think it would really be cool for them to be able to come to a show and see, how the work has progressed over the years, and not just see it on Instagram. So
Yeah.
so that's my goal in 2026, is really to like dive into the Durham art scene and try to figure out a place to have a show, because I have a lot of sculptures that I've been working on, and I want the next show to be, completely, all like wooden sculptures.
I love it. I
And
love it.
so yeah, so that's what I'm working on right now.
Perfect. Maybe a good time for me to finally make my way to North Carolina.
Sure.
I got to drive through DC last year to see you, and now that you're in North Carolina, I'll have to make my way out there. So, I feel like there was one last thing that I wanted to ask you, but I'm like completely blanking. I don't know. Maybe I've not had enough coffee yet this morning. But I can't thank you enough, Esteban. Again, I'm just such a big fan. I think, we've worked together professionally here now for a couple of years, but I think with all artists that I've been fortunate enough to work with, number one, I'm just like a huge fan. And I should probably give a shout out to my buddy Tyler Lynch, who is a really cool digital artist and sort of always, I'm such an old man now these days, but he's like really into like the avant-garde artist. And you know what, back when I was first starting this folk artwork, whatever, he was like, dude, Esteban Whiteside follows you. And I was like, oh great, I should look into that. And then of course immediately was just blown away by your work. I guess the last thing, and I could talk for hours, and I'm a high school art teacher, so I can like kill, I can, if there's 6 minutes left in the clock, I could talk for six straight minutes. Finally, the other day, I had a little a girl say to me, who I knew really well, so I wasn't offended. She's like, just shut up already, dude. Okay, you're right. But the what I wanted to say back talking about your work again, and sort of your I think it's hard for artists, and who cares at the end of the day. I think there's a great Mike Tyson quote who's like, who cares about my legacy? But I think one thing about your work that I think about, that I hope you feel and maybe can and have some comfort in is, again, there's a lot of art out there today that might make colors, might make people feel good and look good. But like, I of course, hopefully, 50, 100 years from now, if 200 years, people are still around, and someone stumbles across your work, finds your work, like, I think, like, it is hopefully not going to still be relevant, but it might be. And it's like a time capsule, and that work is going to be able to have a lasting impression. And again, really, it's like, just sort of unfortunately telling the tale of the unfortunate events that are happening, But like you bringing awareness to it and again making people think, it's really great, man. So again, I'm very fortunate to know you and be able to see your work, hold your work in person, and talk to people about your work. Again, at the art fair, it was just great to kind of talk to people, even the one lady who wasn't a fan of it. Got to talk to her. But it was great. So thanks again. Keep up
Thank
the great
you.
work. And I hope to make it to North Carolina this summer.
Hope so, man. Well, thank you, man. Thank you for this and for everything that you've done. You've been awesome since we met. And even before we met, I loved what you were doing, and I was like, loved your page. So it's always been positive. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. Here's to hopefully bigger and better things. So thanks again, Esteban.
All right.
When I can't go back to sleep at night, I politely and repeatedly ask my passed out 4-year-old to stop kicking me. When Steve Ashby wakes up and can't go back to sleep, he gets to work. Born in 1904, Steve Ashby spent his entire life in Delaplaine, Virginia, living in a one-room schoolhouse with his wife and adopted son, working at the farm where his father and previous generations of his family had been enslaved. Ashby received little formal education and remained illiterate for his entire life. But that didn't stop him from creating some of the most fun and inventive folk art sculptures of the 20th century. Having been sculpting and carving wood most of his life, it wasn't until he was in his 60s, after the passing of his wife and his son moved out of the home, where he turned to sculpture full-time. Within a few years, his slapdash and humorous works of art, like Mother and Child, often comprising of found objects and personal items, were exhibited in folk art shows across the country. Smaller works cut from plywood and painted with model airplane paint, and larger sculptures made from tree trunks and branches, which he adapted the American folk art tradition of wind-activated whirligigs, all using found objects like timber and lumber, bottle caps, old clothing, and magazine cutouts. Although his art was a vivid reflection of the daily life around him, inspired by black exploitation films of the 1970s, he claimed to be most inspired by his dreams. I wake up with an idea that won't let me get back to sleep, so I get up and I make that idea. I was first introduced to Steve Ashby's work by contemporary self-taught artist Esteban Whiteside, who take inspiration from artists like Ashby and Elijah Pierce into his own wood carvings that reflect the lives of the black community in America. Ashby's work can be seen in a handful of collections across the country, including the American Folk Art Museum. Pause for artwork. Head on over to their website to check out their online incredible collection of American folk art. Some of my favorite self-taught artists ever, including, but not limited to, the one and only Steve Ashby. Thank you to everybody. Thank you. Thank you for joining. Thank Esteban for being here, getting up early. It was early for us when we recorded this. Thanks to everybody for listening, for the feedback, for the comments. If you can, like, subscribe, leave a review, a comment. That is how, unfortunately, in this world that we get seen and get this out in front of more and more people. But I do appreciate all the lovely feedback I've gotten so far for everybody for listening. Again, I can't thank you all enough. It's really been a blast, as I mentioned in this episode. Unfortunately, I could just text these people or call them or meet up with them and get to know them better in real life. But I guess that is one of the good things about a podcast in the year 2026. It is now. That's crazy to think about that. I can talk to them over the computer and record it and share it with you all. So I've really enjoyed doing this. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these as well. And thank you. I'll just say it again and again and again. Thank you. If you're listening to this the day that comes out, hope to see you at First Friday at Mainframe Studios in Des Moines, Iowa. And if you've already come to visit,
Thank you. And if it is past Friday, January 2nd, come to another one. I think I'll be there more often. Again, stay tuned for that. Lots of fun, exciting things happening in 2026. And I hope to tell you more all about that soon. Stay tuned. Subscribe to the This Week in Outsider Art newsletter on Substack. That's folkartwork at substack.com. Follow us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at folkartwork. Go to the Folk Artwork website. Shop self-taught art, folk art from some of the greatest, best artists in the world. And I hope you have a fantastic new year. Bye. And thank you to Jason Brown for the Folk Artwork and Friends theme song and all the interstitials. So many great little ditties that he put together for me. I can't thank him enough. Go check out more original music from Jason at sapwood.bandcamp.com. Buy an album. Support folk musicians like Jason. Thank you again, friend. Can't thank you enough. You are the best.